Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike Zlatnik. Today it is my distinct pleasure and a privilege to welcome Jordan Fisher. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Very good.
Jordan, you are my great friend. We've known each other for many years. You're a business associate. We've done business together. We continue to do business. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast.
Well, it's my pleasure. Happy to help.
So for the folks, this is going to be one of the best episodes by far, because Jordan is one of the best real estate brokers in the country. He sells properties like nobody else. So this episode is just going to be phenomenal. Before we jump into that, about Jordan's method, how he sells houses. Jordan, tell the audience a couple of things about you. Where do you live? Where do you do real estate and so on?
Sure, Mike. Yeah, I'm a bunch of different things. I live in Los Angeles in Pasadena, California. Been here for a long time. Do a bunch of different types of real estate. Certainly real estate investing quite a bit, flipping, whatever you want to call it. You know, I don't really like that word, but quite a bit of that. Been a broker for a long time. I sell a lot of real estate, both for retail sellers and for a lot of investors throughout Southern California, both in person and a lot virtually as well. And I've run a fund with Mike for a long time, and a bunch of other things. I'm also a contractor, so that's quite busy these days. We do a lot of contract work on people's houses, additions, remodeling, renovations. So he's pretty busy here in Southern California.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You have a great this interior decoration business, and you're contracting renovations, and you're an expert in a lot of fields. But let's start by talking about the absolutely best way to sell any house in any market. And the reason I want to say any house in any market is because markets go up, markets go down. We're recording this episode where we know the markets are showing signs of softness. The markets can weaken. And this has method work in markets that's going up, has worked that's even better in the market that's going down, and works pretty well in flat markets. People will say it doesn't work in some rural areas and some other small towns, and I will go with this. I will allow for some exceptions. But the technique is absolutely strong, and most people should absolutely understand what it is. So tell us a little bit about Jordan's method. What's the best way to sell houses? How do you start, and how do you go about it? And what's the benefit?
Sure. No, that's a good question. I think you know, I help agents and investors sell real estate all across the country, even though I'm in Los Angeles. And I think one of the big things to realize if you're an agent or investor is a lot of people say, you know, you make money in real estate when you buy real estate, you know, on the buy. You better get at the right price or you're done from the start. While that is very true, that's very important. You also make a lot of money or your deal falls apart when you sell real estate. And a lot of people don't consider how important that is. They kind of think that it is there are standard ways to do it, and the results are about the same as long as you follow the standard approach that most agents know and have, you know, agent representation. Then you're going to be fine. It's going to sell how it would sell no matter what you did, which is absolutely untrue. So I think, I've kind of developed a system. It's just kind of how I go ahead and sell real estate and how I teach people to sell real estate, really just based on it's not really I guess they are unique things, certainly, but they're really just focusing on things that are important on the market, things that are facts. They're not on trends. They're on real life numbers and real life methodology. It is an art and a science, but the science is real. So the art is just in terms of your personality and how you go about doing things. So go ahead, Mike. You go ahead.
So, yeah, these are the great thoughts. I guess, yeah, I like how you started that it's starting people make money on the buy. For sure, you make money on the buy. But you could significantly enhance your investment by maximizing the sales price, and that's what you're really good at. So let's start with the basics. Yes. The basics is you most brokers out there, when they try to get a listing, when they get a listing, they exaggerate the price. The reason they do this is because they want to get a listing. So if somebody comes in and wants to list a property, let's just talk about $1 million property. Let's just say it's a Los Angeles, right? It's $1 million property.
Yes.
A broker shows up in front of a seller and they say, listen, I'll sell your house for $1.1 million. They promise them the world. And the reality is they're trying to get a listing. And
that's right.
In my view, it's incorrect. It's just they're going to waste their time and they're going to take them down the wrong path. What you do is a little different. You will assume for the moment the house should sell for $1 million. You will not list it for $1 million. You will list it for, 5% less, 5 to 7% less? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. It took me 5 to 7% less. And that really is just part of the system. It's not just pricing it lower, but it's why you're doing it. It's how you're doing it. It's when you're doing it. It's a whole system together. Because when you sell properties, it's a strategy from start to finish. It is very proactive. It is not reactive. It is thinking about things 10 steps ahead. So you're really controlling the whole process. They always say, they always teach agents the three most important words in real estate, the three most important L's are location, location, location. I would disagree. I would say you can look at this selling system as the three most important L's are leverage, leverage, leverage. Mike knows that I'm a big fan and student of leverage. I try to have leverage in anything I do in business. And I think it's really important because I would say, I would guess that 99.99%, and I don't seem to think I'm underestimating or overestimating them, of agents and investors go ahead and rely on hope in their business. Hope. And when I talked to a lot of agents and investors, they would say, no, I'm professional. I use a lot of standards. I do things the way I was taught. I do things by the book. I do things the way everyone does them. And I don't use hope. I do things by professional. I do things in a certain manner and they're all thought out. Well, they may think that, but I'm just telling you that there is no hope, right? There is no room for hope in the business of real estate. Whether you're an agent or investor, there's no room for hope. Hope means that you are, right? You got a lack of control. You're relying on, there is some uncertainty in the transaction. You're kind of, there might be some luck in the transaction. You're just like letting some uncertainty go into the deal because when you're hoping for things, you're hoping that things will go the way that you know they will go or that they should go. And that means there is uncertainty. And when you have uncertainty, you don't have any leverage. And when you don't have any leverage, you can't control the deal. And that's when things get sideways. So my system is really to create and maintain leverage all the way through when you're selling a property. So you're proactive, you know what to do, you're in control the whole way. And when you do that, you'll get, you know, you'll sell real estate for the most money possible in the least amount of time with, you know, the most control, the ultimate control of the deal. And it will be a lot more fun for all parties.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. You have leverage in the deals. I love how you put it. And you start with a low price to create leverage. That's one of the techniques. Price is a magnet.
Yes. Right?
Price is a marketing magnet. When people see $1 million property listed for sale for $930,000, what do they instantly think? I got to run, look at this property. There's got to be something wrong with the property. But you often have a great property in perfect condition, but you still list it below the, let's just say, target sales price because you want the leverage. You want people to come to the house and feel like they're competing with other people. And so let's talk a little bit about that. So you list it low, you take an inbound phone calls with interest, you don't show the house, right? You basically let people go see the house during the open house hours on a weekend when you have everybody coming in and they're all competing with each other for this property. Could you talk a little bit about that? You're creating leverage.
Yeah.
What are these steps are to create leverage?
Yes. Maybe I'll use two analogies. I'm just thinking that it just came to mind when you said that to explain this. You know the old analogy, if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, doesn't make a sound, right? Everyone's heard that analogy. It's the same when you put a property. If you sell a property and it's a great property, it's beautiful, but no one is there to hear it, or no one wants to look at it because the price is wrong or it's not extremely attractive or something about it, just because it looks good doesn't mean people will go get it. If something isn't about it and price is a big factor in terms of getting people to at least investigate, then you know what? You don't even have a conversation. You have no leverage and the deal goes nowhere. You're just wasting time. I would rather have the market. The market is very powerful. The free market is very powerful. If you do the right things and expose the property and you have a great property, the pictures are right, the description is right, it looks beautiful, and you're doing all the right things not to put challenges in your way, not to put hurdles in your way. You do the right things. right? You've got to price it right so the market comes to you now. And when the market comes to you now, it doesn't matter why they're coming. I'll explain this later. But I want the market to come to me now, and then we can have a conversation. And then we can make the market pit against each other, bid against each other, and bump up the price to everyone. That's really how we start leverage. We start leverage by having an audience that is listening. Just having a great property or a hot listing, a lot of agents think that they get a hot listing in a great area. They have a lot of power, and they price it really high and say, hey, I have the only listing in this area or on this street. It's the best listing, the best house. I'm going to price it accordingly, and people are going to jump at it. That isn't how it works. It's about creating the market, the free market, to work for you in your advantage. And the only way to do that, to use the power of the free market system, is to do all the things right with the property so it looks great, but then also price it accordingly so the market comes to you now. It doesn't matter if the market comes, if they look at the price and think, I always like to do this. I always tell people, have a beautiful property with great pictures, a great description, but an awkwardly low price. I always say that, awkwardly low. When I say awkwardly low, I say awkwardly low because I want the market to think it's awkward enough that they think something is up, something is maybe wrong, or something is misplaced, or there's something that I have to move that creates my sense of urgency on this property. The buyers may think that the seller is bleeding, maybe because it's a little low and needs to sell it quickly. They may think that maybe there's something wrong with the property, and that's why it's priced accordingly, because the pictures look great, the description looks great, it's in a great area. Like, what is the problem? The price is awkwardly not matching everything else I see. And that's what I want. So that's one analogy, is to get the market to come to you now, because it doesn't matter why they come. I just want them to come. I can always correct why they think they're coming, right? The seller's bleeding, the property is, something's wrong. I can always correct that in 1 second on the phone, right? But if they don't call in the first place, then I never have a conversation. I never can correct it. And I never have a chance to sell it to them, right?
That's right. That's absolutely outstanding. Yeah, you look for perfection in every property. We've had this discussion before. You don't want to have attention to detail, missing anything. It's got to look perfect. So
that's right, because I lose my leverage, right? Because anything that a buyer or an agent can use against me, or against the seller, or against the seller listing agent, that's me. Anything they can use against me that is something wrong with the house that I really can't answer well, you know, hey, why didn't you replace the windows? Why did you do the whole house and not the front yard? Right? Like, there's like 10 million things. If that's the case, that I lose my leverage and I have to regain that back. So I want to have as much leverage as possible so I can really like pound my fist and pound my gavel and like put all my leverage possible to push the price up as far as I can without a buyer able to put their thumb on me. Right? And I don't make it personal. I'll go into that later, but I don't make it personal.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You absolutely, it's funny how people can have $1 million property with the finishes and faucets and a few little things from a $100,000 house. I mean, it's just amazing. I've seen that, maybe not that extreme, but they get cheap or they don't finish. They get 95% down, they leave 5% alone. They think that 5% on the cost savings that they didn't put in, or even 2%, could mean 5-10% on the price, because they're missing the whole picture. It's not a game of perfection, but it's a game of leverage. So
it is a game of leverage. You said that exactly right. I can't tell you how many properties I've sold for investors asking me to sell, and I go look at the property and everything's done well except there's no oven, there's no range. And I say, oh, well, what happened? Why is there a space in the kitchen with no oven? And they say, well, you know, I've already spent all I want to spend, and I don't know what kind of oven to get. So I'll tell you what, I'll tell all the buyers, if they want to make an offer, have them write me the offer that the seller will buy an oven. So that isn't the issue here. And then, you know, the issue is, if you don't have an oven, then people will question in their mind, why isn't there an oven? And they'll think, if there isn't an oven there, there must be a lot of other things wrong. And all of a sudden their mind is in the wrong place. It's not that you can't, buy an oven, or it's not that as a seller or the agent, you're not willing to throw that in. The offer won't even come, or that it will be, you're losing your leverage from the start because that's not there. It's as simple as when you walk in the house and a light switch is turned like about an inch or like quarter, it's just not straight. It's so simple. I could straighten up in a quarter second and be like, oh, it's straight. Sorry. Well, I'll tell you what, when you walk in and a buyer sees a light switch is not straight, it's one of those things. It's, why isn't the light switch straight? Someone didn't pay attention to detail. And if that's wrong, there must be maybe things behind the walls or the ceiling that I can't see. And maybe that's being hidden and everything, the detail isn't done like the pictures say. And all of a sudden the mind goes in the wrong place. So leverage is very easily, it like leaks air very quickly. So that's why I say, like, you want to have everything like buttoned up so you can maintain your leverage as much as possible.
That's brilliant. I agree with you 100%. Let's move forward a little bit through the process. So kind of walk through the process. House is in perfect condition, as perfect as it can be. The price is low. The phone rings. You don't let the house be seen until the open house. It comes open house. Get everybody in. There's a lot of interest, and you start taking offers. So what happens then? Let's talk a little bit about this. I heard this joke. People say, what's the listing price? And they tell, well, I mean, you probably tell them listing price is irrelevant. So people ask, what is the asking price? There is no asking price. This is a listing price, and it's listed low on purpose, so you can come and see it.
That's right. Right. I always say, right, the listing price is just, the lower the listing price is just a flag you're waving in the air. I wouldn't lower it. We did, you know, it really depends on the market. That's an art and a science, but I certainly have rules about how to list the house. But when the list price is not a selling price, it's just like a flag you're waving in the air to draw people there. That's all it is. It means nothing else other than that, period. So when sellers freak out all of a sudden when I say, oh, why don't we list it at this, or I think we should do that, and they say, well, I'm not taking that, or I can't sell it for that, I'll lose money. It's not about that. It's just a flag I'm waving in the air to draw the people in. The market, if we do things right, the market will tell us who's interested, how much they'll pay, and then we can squeeze, when we have leverage, we can squeeze really hard to get that number up and up and up.
So let's talk a little bit about this. So what's interesting is this. If you're in a down market, take $1 million property, and you list it for $950 or $930, and under good conditions, you'll have multiple offers, and typically you'll have some offers over the listing price, some offers below listing price, a bunch right around listing price. People will not negotiate, or at least they'll negotiate, but they'll try to make offer at the listing price. But what happens if the market is down and the market is weak and you listed at 950 and you're not getting too much activity? I mean, that may be a wake-up call that you're overpricing the property, even at the low price.
Correct. If you do everything right and you present the property well and you expose it to the market on the MLSs, on the Zillows and the Trulias and everywhere else in the world, that so it's on the open market and everyone can see it, and you have the price and the property looks good and the price, you put a price that you think is right, that is low, it's going to drive people in, and people don't come in. You don't get the response you want, or you don't get really the offers coming in. It doesn't really matter that you get the eyes. You don't also get the offers coming in. There's a problem there. You probably are not recognizing something. It's either one of two things. It's either the price is too high and you've overestimated what you think the fair market value of the house is, or there is something wrong with the house. Maybe it's the flow of the house, maybe exactly where it's located, maybe the neighbors, maybe the street, maybe something else, the curb, something you have overestimated. We're not taking that into account that the market does, and that's why they're not responding. So you've got to solve those things, fix those things quickly, and react quickly.
Yeah, very good point. Could be something wrong with the house. Could be people walk in, and when they walk in, there's a neighbor with a crazy dog, mad dog right outside, providing entertainment for the people during the open house. And it kind of makes them a little nervous about the neighbors. I hear you. But let's walk through the process. So let's just say you have a great open house, you know, a bunch of people interested, a bunch of offers. So what do you do from there? You ask them to come back with the highest and best, tell them you got a bunch of offers. How do you lift them up?
Yeah, I think just to go back one step to get to there, the whole key really is when you set up your system of how you're going to sell property, and you need to communicate to the market, which is really all the agents, how you're going to sell the property, meaning when the timeline, when the open house will be, what time it will be from, when the seller will review the offers, when a decision will be made, when counters will go out, what kind of counters will go out. Because what you're doing is you're setting expectations. I once, a long, long time ago, I read a book called, How to Run a Successful Meeting, something like that. It was all about setting up expectations.
How to Run Successful what?
How to Run a Successful Meeting. It was one of the best books I read, and it's not only about a meeting, it applies to everything. And it was all about being proactive and setting up the rules so you can police as you go along. For example, if I ran a meeting and I was sitting in an office room with 10 people and I started running a meeting and I anticipated to give a half an hour of content and then I was going to take questions, and 5 minutes in, someone raised their hand for a question. And I said, oh, you know what? I'll answer that at the end. And I didn't say at the beginning, I'm going to give a 30-minute speech. It's going to end at this time. I'm going to take questions at the end. And this is how it's going to be. If I didn't do that at the beginning, it's tough to police during the thing. So after 5 minutes, if someone raises their hand and I say, you know, I'll take questions at the end, they say, well, I really want to ask about this. It's very tough to police because I didn't set up the rules from the start. So same thing in real estate. You got to set up the selling system from the start. So I may say, and this is when the open house is and reviewing offers this, and the counters need to be out by this and back in by this. So setting up that system is really important. So going back to your question, when you get all the offers in, I've already set up with the agents who wanted to see it or at the open house or in the listing, a bunch of different places, how offers will be reviewed, right? So I may say things, and then you can use, then as an arch, you can use little things that help you establish additional leverage. Like when you tell agents who have submitted offers or agents who are asking, you know, what do I need to do to get this deal? What number do I need to submit? Things like that. You can say, not every offer will be countered. I would submit your highest and best. I would submit whatever offer your buyer's comfortable with, right? Because that's not personal. That I didn't make it personal. I didn't say, I give them a number, because if I give them a number and it ends up being wrong or something that doesn't pan out in the market or something about it is just odd or it seems high or it seems like I'm pushy, that's very personal. I don't like to be personal on that because it can only come back negatively. You can come back positive, but maybe I don't really care. I'm just trying to avoid the negative. I want to let the market work the way it is. So instead, I will say, have your buyer make the best offer. Not every offer will be countered. When I say that, that's a scary thing for buyers. That means if they submit at list price or something they think they're hoping to get a counter with, they may not get a counter. They better submit pretty high because only a few people will get counters. You see, I just slipped one thing in. That was only like one out of 100 things I could do that just put leverage in the transaction without me being personal. I didn't make it about Jordan did that. That's just the way that this runs because I set it up that way.
Yeah, it's a brilliant system. You set expectations up front, and that statement that not every offer will be countered. So please talk to your buyers and submit the highest and best or the offer the buyer is comfortable with. But that little point that not every offer will be countered is an incredibly powerful idea. So let's keep walking through the process. Just want to make sure we communicate the whole thing because we have short time. I don't want to take an hour on this.
Sure. Call.
So what happens next?
Yep.
You take them through the process and they'll come back. You counter a few with highest and best. And then let's just say you have two really good offers. One is a little better than the other. What do you do to maintain leverage?
A lot of things. Maintaining leverage and counters is really important. How you counter, the terms that you counter with are extremely important. Highest and best, what Mike just mentioned, is a really important highest and best offer and terms, right? Offer is the price. Terms are the terms of the offer. They're both different. They're very important rather than countering a certain number. Why you do that? Most people have seen the movie Monsters, Inc. I like to use that analogy. The monster, the little kid in it said, oh, there's a monster in my closet. And the monster opened the closet and didn't see anyone in there. And he walked in there to see it and closed the closet. And then he said, oh, wait, now there's a monster in my closet, right? Because he was standing there. Everyone has their own monster. If I say example you use where it's $1 million property, if I counter people, let's say I priced it, you said, Mike, at 935, and I countered at 97, right? Or 980, whatever. Let's say 980, I countered. 980 to some buyers might think like that's reasonable. Other buyers might think that that is a really high offer. Other buyers might think that that's low and they thought I countered a million. Who knows? The question is, I don't know. So me putting my own personal opinion in there and all, I'm getting in the way again of the free market dynamics that will get me the best price in the fastest time possible. So rather than do that, right, I will say I'll do highest and best. Because everyone has their own monster. I don't know what that is. For some buyers, it's 980. For some buyers, it's a million. For some buyers, it's 950. I don't know what that is. So I will put it in the buyer's hands, and they will be, and just create things where they will feel like they will feel when I say like not every offer will be countered, things like that. I'm giving them a fear of loss, which lets them create their own monster in their head, and they will submit their highest and best offer.
Understood. I think it's you put it in a real brilliant way. Now you're down to say three really good offers, and you are sort of they've given their highest and best. So somebody gave you 985, sure. Another one gave you the full million, and somebody else gave you 970.
Sure.
How do you
kind I know of where you're going
against each other, maintain the leverage, and what do you tell them? I heard the story before, so you make them feel like there's a better offer, and you're picking their offer. Just because you like how they look or, whatever else they offer.
Yes. Yes. That's the only time. A lot of age, it's really important. When you have counters out and counters come back and you feel like you've pushed, we'll just go this, and you feel like you've pushed as much as you can, you've done the right things in leverage, and you're ready to accept an offer, this goes back again to why you don't put a price in an offer. If I said in a counter, 980 and a buyer said, 980. I agree with that. That's like a handshake in the middle, right? That's like the seller and the buyer ring a 980 handshake. When you handshake, you're all of a sudden lost your leverage. Now I have leverage. Now I'm at even. I'm at an even playing field with the buyer. I have lost my leverage. I'm even. I said 980. They said 980. We are even. I never want to be even when I'm selling a property. Never, ever, 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 ever. I'll tell you why. Because I've lost my leverage. So what I want to do when I accept, when an offer is the number that, you know, the highest, what the market will say, the highest and best it is, and you pushed all you can. A lot of agents will call the buyer's agent to say, hey, great news. You know what? You're the highest offer and the seller accepted it. Let's open escrow. Again, you're like meeting in the middle. You've shaken hands. The best way normally is to make it about personal reasons, to say that, you know what? Your offer is really strong. We had a lot of strong offers, but you know what? For example, the seller, I got the seller to accept your offer because you had a family. So I only wanted to sell with someone who had a family. Oh, because you have a business in the area, or he likes something about your business that you're in, or you said you like the house and he's only going to sell it to someone who wasn't going to disturb the house, who's going to keep the house. Something personal, because then you want the other buyer on the other side. You always want to make them feel like there's a fear of loss. Like, oh my God, like they accepted my offer when they probably should have taken someone else's offer. And it was only for personal reasons, not for financial reasons. And that way I better behave, because if I ever push back on the financial reasons, the seller has a lot of other offers or stronger offers or other ones that they might consider and kick me out, cancel, and go to another offer. So that's why I maintain leverage. And that's really how, when you're selling properties, you eliminate a lot of other problems during the escrow coming back, whether they do inspections, anything else, other things that they might find and have to push back for credits or whatever. If they always feel like you have leverage over them and you might cancel or take something else because there's a lot of interest and a lot of pollen and not the strongest offer, you have a lot of leverage and you're bound to get a lot less asking for credit.
Yeah, that's. I just love how you present it. You need to teach in front of thousands of agents, because this is just such a powerful concept. You make them feel good about them, and then you chose them among a list of others, and you have many other choices. And at that point, they feel they want to close. They don't want to give you any hard time about anything. They don't want to delay. They don't want to tell you about some little repair thing that they find during the inspection and so forth.
That's correct.
But I guess you take the leverage all the way to the inspection process as you go into the escrow. Then there's typically a mortgage appraisal, and then if it's a mortgage, and then there is a property inspection, and then they come out with reports. This leverage helps you during negotiation. You may still give them a little bit if some real issues are found or you address the issues, but at least you maintain the leverage, because they feel that if you know, you can drop them and take another offer any day of the week.
Yes, leverage and timelines are really important. When you counter, you should really specify in your counter all the timelines, right? The three contingencies, right? Appraisal, loan, inspection. Those have to have tight timelines on them, and you need to police that. And if you communicate with a buyer's agent and in your counter that you will be policing that, and those timelines are hard, and they are usually calendar days, not days. Calendar days is quite a difference. Calendar days include the weekend and holidays. Days does not, typically, sometimes the weekend, but not holidays. Then you can really police it, and you can make sure that you're get buyers to perform. Because let's be honest, buyers and buyers agents never realize that every day a seller holds a property costs them money, whether it's an investor and costing private money, their own money, or opportunity costs, or they cost them mortgage costs, or whatever else it costs them, property taxes, utilities, insurance, every single day costs money. So buyers and buyers agents don't realize that. So when they say, oh, we were going to close Wednesday, my buyer would like to close the following Monday instead, that way they can move over the weekend or whatever else they want to do. They don't realize how much money that actually costs a seller. So very important to put that in your counters and maintain that as a listing agent all the way along through the escrow, to maintain the buyer holds their timeline, performs as specified, and that way you have leverage. Because if it's in the contract and you did that and created the expectations from the start and the rules, you can police that and say, hey, inspection was 10 days. I had it in contract. I told you that. It's the 10th day. You either waive your inspection or I'm issuing you a notice to perform, right? And you can do a lot of things to protect the sellers. If nothing else, and the buyer cancels and doesn't perform, you can get the buyer's EMD, or you can do a lot to like work towards getting the buyer's earnest money deposit, so the seller is compensated for all this wasted time if you have to go back and list it again, right? Or you can force the buyer to close in a time frame that you want, a very quick timeline that saves you, the seller, or the investor, the most money possible.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We forget that $1 million property, even a small dollar property, you have the carry cost as a seller. If you're an investor, you could have your own mortgage, you could have a hard money loan, you could have a traditional mortgage, you could have insurance, taxes, and the cost per diem could be easily $200-$300, easily, if not more.
Easily. So it's important to put those kind of penalties in counters. Things like, oh, you have 30 days, if it's a loan, you have 30 days to close. Every day after 30 days is a $200 per day, right, per diem interest penalty to the buyer for buyer non-performance. Or whatever it is, it really depends on the property price, where you're located, right, how long your timelines are, all that thing. But you can put a lot of things in counters and explain it to the buyer's agent because they never understand. But when you explain it and say, look, it costs the seller money, if the seller is not holding up the transaction, but the buyer is more than a reasonable time frame, more than we have agreed to in the contract already, then obviously the seller's got to be compensated. That makes all the sense. It's just about fairness.
This is back to the expectation setting. You're setting expectations on time frame, on everything, all the contingencies, and you're controlling the process. This way, the buyer can just decide that they want to take an extra week off because they want to go on vacation. That extra week off can cost the seller, you know, a few $1,000. So from that perspective, it's a critical component of the whole process.
Critical. I can't emphasize that enough. Mike knows this, but I cannot emphasize that enough. How many agents and investors do not take the selling process as seriously as they do the buying process. And because they just think it's more of a commodity, I guess, the selling process, and things will just work out the way they are if you do things. That is, I can't stress, it's not about hundreds of dollars. It's not even usually about thousands of dollars. It's usually about tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, even on bigger properties, just by controlling everything from the start. Now, again, the only thing I want to emphasize, it is a two-way sword. When you control things, you really have to have a system in mind, have a strategy in mind, know what to do, be proactive from the start, because what you're doing is you're creating this world of leverage, this world of control for you, and you're creating all these expectations that now you need to deliver on. Offers will be reviewed in this time frame, counters will be sent out this time frame, you need to close in this time frame. You're setting all these expectations that now you need to deliver on, because the second that the seller, the listing agent, does not deliver on the expectations being set, all of a sudden your leverage starts to fade. It starts to wane because now you're not doing what you said you would do. And so all of a sudden your control starts to weaken. And now you're giving the buyer a lot more leverage. That's what I mean. You can leak error. So it's very important that when you set up this whole system, you just police it and do it as you say. So.
Right. Doing what you say is called integrity. So if you could do the process with high integrity,
that's right.
We'll come across as a very great broker. If you're selling a property. So what's the message to, I guess, investors, homeowners? If they're working in a local market and they're trying to list it with their friendly neighborhood broker, should they just get the broker to give you a call? Maybe you get a consulting business out of it. I'm kidding. I know you don't need this, but I know you've educated a number of these folks, and it's not easy to change. Whoever is selling the house the old way and now you're telling them, do it my way, the leverage way. You'll sell it for more, you'll sell it faster, and you'll have leverage to the whole process. People who are going to do it, they got to do it with full commitment to the right process rather than let me just list low and see what happens from there.
Correct. I mean, Mike is the first to attest to this. Mike knows because he's been on these calls. How many times, I would say at least twice a week, I get on a call with a seller usually and their agent, because things are not panning out the way they hope they would be selling a property. They're not selling quick enough. They're not getting offers. The offers are too low. Something's happening. And we're usually on the call all the time just trying to solve this issue. And it isn't like, I don't look at it at least as like, I'm trying to convince now this listing agent, this broker to do it my way to get the results that we all hope we can get. It's not really my way. I mean, my way, to be honest, is really just, I'm looking at the free market. I'm letting the free market do its job. When I see things go wrong, it means that people have gotten in the way, brokers, listing agents, sellers, of the free market by either pricing it. They've gotten in the way of having the market come and then do what they're supposed to do and bid the most you can and take control. They've just gotten in the way. And so it's more just, I don't think I have a problem like convincing someone to do it my way, because I really don't look at it as my way. It's more just like, I'm just outlining things that when I say, you know, you should do this and this and this because of this, I'm really just looking at the market and giving facts. They're not negotiable. They're just like what the market is telling us. I'm just repeating back. If you listen to what the market is telling you and do what it is, you will sell the property fast for the most money. And there's obviously an art to it to push and push and get the highest you can. But you got to do the fundamentals right. And oftentimes the fundamentals are not done.
Yeah, Jordan, I really appreciate this key point. This is so relevant, especially now when the market is softening up in many geographic areas. Because folks have expectations. And then I don't know where they get their number, what they think they're going to sell it for. They look at the comps. They look at the Zillow. They look at potentially some kind of optimistic. Everybody wants to be an optimist. It's easy to be an optimist. Yeah. But realist is hard. And that's why understanding comps, understanding trends, and trying to get a realistic starting point and then managing the process, like you explained, is the key. But this is going to be more and more relevant in a softening market because people will start renovating a house. By the time they're done, the market could have softened up. Also, things could happen. They started renovation in May, and then they finished in November. It was a serious renovations. Now they're hitting the market at the wrong time when everything is very slow or slower. So right. Do you make any kind of cyclical adjustments for season of the year? Does that make a difference?
It's not so much that. It's just what happens is the market's been really good for the last couple of years, and now it is softening. When it's been really good, a property that a seller or a listing agent has sold for $500,000, and they're very happy about because if they sold for $500,000, I look at that and say, in a good market the last couple of years, if we did it differently and did it the way that I'm suggesting, we probably could have gotten 530, 540. So they're happy because the market was going up and they made money, but you know what? You left $30,000 or $40,000 on the table, you don't even realize. So they're happy. In a bad market and when it's softening like this, what happens is when they try to sell a property and they do it wrong, it doesn't even sell. Right. What happens is it gets stale. It sits on the market. They start chasing the market down by lowering the price in little increments that doesn't do anything the market could care less about. For example, like you said, $1 million property, someone will list it $1 million. It doesn't sell. And a month later, they'll list it at $980. Well, $20,000 in $1 million property, that's just the percentages. It's not there. It's not going to make a difference in the market. The market's not going to go, wow, what happened? That's not awkwardly low. Right. As I said, you've got to do it awkward so people wake up and go, what is that? Like something's wrong. Something's happening. There's a sense of urgency that I've now put in play and I made the market come to me. So I just say, you can't control the price. The world will ultimately pay for your property. You can't control it. Anyone who thinks they can is ridiculous. But I can control the amount of interest the world has in my property. And once I control the amount of interest they have, right, then you have the world at your hands. And then at that point, you can press and push and do whatever you need to do. You use all your leverage you have to build that price up.
Jordan, this is so brilliant. I so much appreciate you explaining it to folks. So if, for the listeners, they wanted to reach you, what's the best way to get a hold of you if they have questions, if they want to have you sell their property for them? If they are in Southern California, where they want to engage you to fly over to Indianapolis and teach all the local real estate agents how to sell a property, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I virtually sell properties in a lot of places, just I never see the property. It's more in the system. Anyway, I guess they can probably email me. My brokerage is Good Bones Properties, like an old house is Good Bones. So the best way probably to reach me is by email, Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N, at goodbonesproperties.com. That's probably the best place.
Jordan at goodbonesproperties.com.
Yep, exactly.
Thank you for sharing your great wisdom and your insight and your knowledge. I think it's very valuable.
I appreciate it, Mike.
Very basic points, but they're very, very powerful. So.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it, Mike. Hope everyone continues to listen to Big Mike's Fun. I've done business with Mike for a while, and you've got some great content there, and I'm happy to help anything like that.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate you, my friend, and I'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFun.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.